Harper Audio presents By the Pricking of My Thumbs by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser.
By the pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes. Macbeth. Book 1. Sunny Ridge. Chapter 1. Aunt Ada. Mr. and Mrs. Beresford were sitting at the breakfast table. They were an ordinary couple. Hundreds of elderly couples just like them were having breakfast all over England at that particular moment. It was an ordinary sort of day, too, the kind of day that you get 5 days out of 7. It looked as though it might rain, but wasn't quite sure of it. Mr. Beresford had once had red hair. There were traces of the red still, but most of it had gone that sandy-come-grey colour that red-headed people so often arrive at in middle life. Mrs. Beresford had once had black hair, a vigorous curling mop of it. Now the black was adulterated with streaks of grey, laid on apparently at random. It made rather a pleasant effect. Mrs. Beresford had once thought of dyeing her hair, but in the end she had decided that she liked herself better as nature had made her. She had decided instead to try a new shade of lipstick so as to cheer herself up. An elderly couple having breakfast together. A pleasant couple, but nothing remarkable about them, so an onlooker would have said. If the onlooker had been young, he or she would have added, "Oh yes, quite pleasant, but deadly dull, of course, like all old people." However, Mr. and Mrs. Beresford had not yet arrived at the time of life when they thought of themselves as old. And they had no idea that they and many others were automatically pronounced deadly dull solely on that account. Only by the young, of course. But then they would have thought, indulgently, young people knew nothing about life. Poor dears, they were always worrying about examinations, or their sex life, or buying some extraordinary clothes, or doing extraordinary things to their hair to make them more noticeable. Mr. and Mrs. Beresford, from their own point of view, were just past the prime of life. They liked themselves, and they liked each other, and day succeeded day in a quiet but enjoyable fashion. There were, of course, moments. Everyone has moments. Mr. Beresford opened a letter, glanced through it and laid it down, adding it to the small pile by his left hand. He picked up the next letter, but forbore to open it. Instead, he stayed with it in his hand. He was not looking at the letter. He was looking at the toast rack. His wife observed him for a few moments before saying, "What's the matter, Tommy?"
"Matter?" said Tommy vaguely. "Matter?"
"That's what I said," said Mrs. Beresford.
"Well, nothing's the matter," said Mr. Beresford. "Why should it be?"
"Well, you've thought of something," said Tuppence accusingly.
"I don't think I was thinking of anything at all."
"Oh, yes, you were. Has anything happened?"
"Well, no, of course not. What should happen?" he added. "I got the plumber's bill."
"Oh," said Tuppence, with the air of one enlightened. "More than you expected, I suppose."
"Well, naturally," said Tommy. "It always is."
"I can't think why we didn't train as plumbers," said Tuppence.
"If you'd only trained as a plumber, I could have been a plumber's mate, and we'd be raking in money day by day." "Very short-sighted of us not to see these opportunities."
"Was that the plumber's bill you were looking at just now?"
"Oh, no, that was just an appeal."
"Delinquent boys? Racial integration?"
"No, just another home they're opening for old people."
"Well, that's more sensible anyway," said Tuppence. "But I don't see why you have to have that worried look about it."
"Oh, I wasn't thinking of that."
"Well, what were you thinking of?"
"I suppose it put it into my mind," said Mr. Beresford.
"What?" said Tuppence. "You know you'll tell me in the end."
"Well, it really wasn't anything important. I just thought, it was Aunt Ada."
"Oh, I see," said Tuppence, with instant comprehension. "Yes," she added, softly, meditatively, "Aunt Ada."
Their eyes met. It is regrettably true that in these days there is in nearly every family the problem of what might be called an Aunt Ada. The names are different. Aunt Amelia, Aunt Susan, Aunt Kathy, Aunt Joan. They are varied by grandmothers, aged cousins, and even great-aunts, but they exist and present a problem in life which has to be dealt with. Arrangements have to be made. Suitable establishments for looking after the elderly have to be inspected and full questions asked about them. Recommendations are sought from doctors, from friends, who have Aunt Adas of their own, who had been perfectly happy until she had died at the Laurels, Bexhill, or Happy Meadows at Scarborough. The days are past when Aunt Elizabeth, Aunt Ada, and the rest of them lived on happily in the homes where they had lived for many years previously, looked after by devoted, if sometimes somewhat tyrannical, old servants, where both sides were thoroughly satisfied with the arrangement. Or there were the innumerable poor relations, indigent nieces, semi-idiotic spinster cousins, all yearning for a good home, with three good meals a day and a nice bedroom. Supply and demand complemented each other, and all was well. Nowadays, things are different. For the Aunt Adas of today, arrangements have to be made suitable not merely to an elderly lady who, owing to arthritis or other rheumatic difficulties, is liable to fall downstairs if she is left alone in a house, or who suffers from chronic bronchitis, or who quarrels with her neighbours and insults the tradespeople. Unfortunately, the Aunt Adas are far more trouble than the opposite end of the age scale. Children can be provided with foster homes, foisted off on relations, or sent to suitable schools where they stay for the holidays. Or arrangements can be made for pony treks or camps, and on the whole very little objection is made by the children to the arrangements so made for them. The Aunt Adas are very different. Tuppence Beresford's own aunt, Great Aunt Primrose, had been a notable troublemaker. Impossible to satisfy her. No sooner did she enter an establishment guaranteed to provide a good home and all comforts for elderly ladies than after writing a few highly complimentary letters to her niece praising this particular establishment, the next news would be that she had indignantly walked out of it without notice.
Impossible! I couldn't stay there another minute!
Within the space of a year, Aunt Primrose had been in and out of 11 such establishments, finally writing to say that she had now met a very charming young man.
Really a very devoted boy. He lost his mother at a young age, and he badly needs looking after. I have rented a flat, and he is coming to live with me. This arrangement will suit us perfectly. We are natural affinities. You need have no more anxieties, dear Prudence. My future is settled. I am seeing my lawyer tomorrow, as it is necessary that I should make some provision for Mervyn if I should predecease him, which is, of course, the natural course of events, though I assure you, at the moment I feel in the pink of health.
Tuppence had hurried north. The incident had taken place in Aberdeen. But as it happened, the police had arrived there first and had removed the glamorous Mervyn, for whom they had been seeking for some time, on a charge of obtaining money under false pretences. Aunt Primrose had been highly indignant and had called it persecution. But after attending the court proceedings, where 25 other cases were taken into account, she had been forced to change her views of her protégé.
"I think I ought to go and see Aunt Ada, you know, Tuppence," said Tommy. "It's been some time."
"I suppose so," said Tuppence, without enthusiasm. "How long has it been?"
Tommy considered.
"It must be nearly a year," he said.
"Oh, it's more than that," said Tuppence. "I think it's over a year."
"Oh, dear," said Tommy. "The time does go so fast, doesn't it? I can't believe it's been as long as that. Still, I believe you're right, Tuppence," he calculated. "It's awful the way one forgets, isn't it? I really feel very badly about it."
"Oh, I don't think you need," said Tuppence. "After all, we send her things and we write letters."
"Yes, I know, you're awfully good about those sorts of things, Tuppence. But all the same, one does read things sometimes that are very upsetting."
"You're thinking of that dreadful book we got from the library," said Tuppence, "and how awful it was for the poor old dears, how they suffered."
"I suppose it was true. Taken from life."
"Oh, yes," said Tuppence. "There must be places like that, and there are people who are terribly unhappy, who can't help being unhappy. But what else is one to do, Tommy?"
"What can anyone do except be as careful as possible? Be very careful what you choose, find out all about it, and make sure she's got a nice doctor looking after her."
Well, nobody could be nicer than Dr. Murray. You must admit that.
Yes, said Tommy, the worried look receding from his face. Murray's a first-class chap. Kind, patient. If anything was going wrong, he'd let us know.
So I don't think you need to worry about it, said Tuppence. How old is she by now?
82, said Tommy.
No, I think it's 83, he added.
It must be rather awful when you've outlived everybody.
Well, that's only what we feel, said Tuppence.
They don't feel it. Well, you can't really tell.
Well, your Aunt Ada doesn't. Don't you remember the glee with which she told us of the number of her old friends that she'd already outlived? She finished up by saying, And as for Amy Morgan, I've heard she won't last more than another 6 months. She always used to say, I was so delicate, and now it's practically a certainty that I shall outlive her. Outlive her by a good many years, too. Triumphant! That's what she was at the prospect.
All the same, said Tommy.
I know, said Tuppence. I know, all the same, you feel it's your duty, so you've got to go.
Well, don't you think I'm right?
Unfortunately, said Tuppence, I do think you're right. Absolutely right. And I'll come too, she added, with a slight note of heroism in her voice.
Oh, no, said Tommy.
Why should you? She's not your aunt.
No, I'll go.
Not at all, said Mrs. Beresford. I like to suffer too. We'll suffer together. You won't enjoy it, and I shan't enjoy it. And I don't think for one moment that Aunt Ada will enjoy it, but I quite see it as one of those things that has got to be done.
Oh, no, I don't want you to go. After all, the last time, remember how frightfully rude she was to you?
Oh, I don't mind that, said Tuppence. It's probably the only bit of her visit that the poor old girl enjoyed. I don't grudge it to her, not for a moment.
You've always been nice to her, said Tommy, even though you don't like her very much.
Oh, nobody could like Aunt Ada, said Tuppence. If you ask me, I don't think anyone ever has.
Oh, one can't help feeling sorry for people when they get old, said Tommy.
I can, said Tuppence. I haven't got as nice a nature as you have.
Being a woman, you're more ruthless, said Tommy.
I suppose that might be. After all, women haven't really got time to be anything but realistic over things. I mean, I'm very sorry for people if they're old or sick or anything, if they're nice people. But if they're not nice people, well, it's different. You must admit, if you're pretty nasty when you're 20, and just as nasty when you're 40, and nastier still when you're 60, and a perfect devil by the time you're 80, well, really. I mean, I don't see why one should be particularly sorry for old people just because they're old. You can't change yourself, really. I know some absolute ducks who were 70 and 80. Old Mrs. Beecham, Mary Carr, and the baker's grandmother, dear old Mrs. Poplett, who used to come in and clean for us. They were all dears and sweet, and I'd do anything I could for them.
All right, said Tommy. Be realistic. But if you really want to be noble and come with me...
I want to come with you, said Tuppence. After all, I married you for better or for worse, and Aunt Ada is decidedly the worse. So I shall go with you, hand in hand, and we'll take her a bunch of flowers and a box of chocolates with soft centres, and perhaps a magazine or two. You might write to Miss, what's-her-name, and say we're coming.
One day next week? I could manage Tuesday, said Tommy, if that's all right for you.
Tuesday it is, said Tuppence. What's the name of the woman? Can't remember. The matron or the superintendent or whoever she is. Begins with a P.
A Miss Packard.
Well, that's right.
Perhaps it'll be different this time, said Tommy.
Different in what way?
Oh, I don't know. Something interesting might happen.
We might be in a railway accident on the way there, said Tuppence, brightening up a little. Why on earth do you want to be in a railway accident? Well, I don't really, of course. It was just...
Well, just what?
Well, it would be an adventure of some kind, wouldn't it? Perhaps we could save lives or do something useful. Useful and at the same time exciting.
What a hope, said Mr. Beresford.
Oh, I know, agreed Tuppence. But it's just that these sort of ideas come to one sometimes.
Chapter 2. Was it your poor child? How Sunny Ridge had come by its name would be difficult to say. There was nothing prominently ridge-like about it. The grounds were flat, which was eminently more suitable for the elderly occupants. It had an ample, though rather undistinguished, garden.
It was a fairly large Victorian mansion kept up in a good state of repair. There were some pleasant, shady trees, a Virginia creeper running up the side of the house, and two monkey puzzles gave an exotic air to the scene. There were several benches in advantageous places to catch the sun, one or two garden chairs, and a sheltered veranda on which the old ladies could sit sheltered from the east winds. Tommy rang the front doorbell, and he and Tuppence were duly admitted by a rather harassed-looking young woman in a nylon overall. She showed them into a small sitting room, saying rather breathlessly,
"I'll tell Miss Packard. She's expecting you, and she'll be down in a minute. You won't mind waiting just a little, will you? But it's old Mrs. Carraway. She's been and swallowed her thimble again, you see."
"How on earth did she do a thing like that?" asked Tuppence, surprised.
"Does it for fun," explained the household help briefly. "Always doing it."
She departed, and Tuppence sat down and said thoughtfully,
"I don't think I should like to swallow a thimble. It'd be awfully bobbly as it went down, don't you think so?"
They had not very long to wait, however, before the door opened, and Miss Packard came in, apologizing as she did so. She was a big, sandy-haired woman of about 50, with an air of calm competence about her which Tommy had always admired. "I'm sorry if I've kept you waiting, Mr. Beresford," she said. "How do you do, Mrs. Beresford? I'm so glad you've come too."
"Somebody swallowed something, I hear," said Tommy.
"Oh, so Marlene told you that. Yes, it was old Mrs. Carraway. She's always swallowing things. Very difficult, you know, because one can't watch them all the time. Of course, one knows children do it, but it seems a funny thing to be a hobby of an elderly woman, doesn't it? It's grown upon her, you know. She gets worse every year. It doesn't seem to do her any harm. That's the cheeriest thing about it."
"But perhaps her father was a salt swallower," suggested Tuppence.
"Now that's a very interesting idea, Mrs. Beresford. Perhaps it would explain things." She went on, "I've told Miss Fanshawe that you were coming, Mr. Beresford. I don't know really whether she quite took it in. She doesn't always, you know."
"How's she been lately?"
"Well, she's failing rather rapidly now, I'm afraid," said Miss Packard in a comfortable voice. "One never really knows how much she takes in and how much she doesn't. I told her last night, and she said she was sure I must be mistaken because it was term time. She seemed to think you were still at school. Poor old things. They get very muddled up sometimes, especially over time. However, this morning, when I reminded her about your visit, she just said it was quite impossible because you were dead." "Oh, well," Miss Packard went on cheerfully, "I expect she'll recognize you when she sees you.
How is she in health? Much the same?"
"Well, perhaps as well as can be expected. Frankly, you know, I don't think she'll be with us very much longer. She doesn't suffer in any way, but her heart condition's no better than it was. In fact, it's rather worse. So I think I'd like you to know that it's just as well to be prepared, so that if she did go suddenly, it wouldn't be any shock to you."
"We brought her some flowers," said Tuppence.
"And a box of chocolates," said Tommy.
"Oh, that's very kind of you, I'm sure. She'll be very pleased. Would you like to come up now?" Tommy and Tuppence rose and followed Miss Packard from the room. She led them up the broad staircase. As they passed one of the rooms in the passage upstairs, it opened suddenly, and a little woman about 5 foot high trotted out, calling in a loud, shrill voice,
"I want my cocoa! I want my cocoa! Where's Nurse Jane? I want my cocoa!"
A woman in a nurse's uniform popped out of the next door and said, "There, there, dear, it's all right. You've had your cocoa. You had it 20 minutes ago."
"No, I didn't, nurse. It's not true. I haven't had my cocoa. I'm thirsty."
"Well, you can have another cup if you like."
"I can't have another one if I haven't had one."
They passed on, and Miss Packard, after giving a brief rap on a door at the end of the passage, opened it and passed in.
"Here you are, Miss Fanshawe," she said brightly. "Here's your nephew come to see you. Isn't that nice?"
In a bed near the window, an elderly lady sat up abruptly on her raised pillows. She had iron-grey hair, a thin wrinkled face with a large, high-bridged nose, and a general air of disapprobation. Tommy advanced.
"Hello, Aunt Ada," he said. "How are you?"
Aunt Ada paid no attention to him, but addressed Miss Packard angrily.
"I don't know what you mean by showing gentlemen into a lady's bedroom," she said. "Wouldn't have been thought proper at all in my young days." telling me he is my nephew indeed. Who is he? A plumber or the electrician?
Now, now, that's not very nice, said Miss Packard mildly. I'm your nephew, Thomas Beresford, said Tommy. He advanced the box of chocolates. I brought you a box of chocolates.
You can't get around me that way, said Aunt Ada. I know your kind. Say anything you will. Who's this woman?
She eyed Mrs. Beresford with an air of distaste.
I'm Prudence, said Mrs. Beresford. Your niece, Prudence.
What a ridiculous name, said Aunt Ada. Sounds like a parlourmaid. My great-uncle Matthew had a parlourmaid called Comfort, and the housemaid was called Rejoice in the Lord. Methodist she was, but my great-aunt Fanny soon put a stop to that. Told her she was going to be called Rebecca as long as she was in her house.
I brought you a few roses, said Tuppence.
I don't care for flowers in a sick room. Use up all the oxygen.
I'll put them in a vase for you, said Miss Packard.
You won't do anything of the kind. You ought to have learnt by now that I know my own mind.
You seem in fine form, Aunt Ada, said Mr. Beresford. Fighting fit, I should say.
I can take your measure, all right. What do you mean by saying that you're my nephew? What did you say your name was? Thomas?
Yes, Thomas or Tommy.
Never heard of you, said Aunt Ada. I had only one nephew, and he was called William. Killed in the last war, good thing, too. He'd have gone to the bad if he'd lived. Oh, I'm tired,
said Aunt Ada, leaning back on her pillows and turning her head towards Miss Packard.
Take him away! You shouldn't let strangers in to see me.
I thought a nice little visit might cheer you up, said Miss Packard, unperturbed.
Aunt Ada uttered a deep bass sound of ribald mirth.
All right, said Tuppence cheerfully. We'll go away again. I'll leave the roses. You might change your mind about them. Come on, Tommy, said Tuppence.
She turned towards the door. Well, goodbye, Aunt Ada. I'm sorry you don't remember me. Aunt Ada was silent until Tuppence had gone out of the door with Miss Packard, and Tommy was following her.
Come back, you, said Aunt Ada, raising her voice. I know you perfectly. You're Thomas. Red-haired you used to be. Carrots, that's the colour your hair was. Come back, I'll talk to you. I don't want the woman. No good pretending she's your wife, I know better. Shouldn't bring that type of woman in here. Come and sit down here in this chair and tell me all about your dear mother. You go away, added Aunt Ada, as a kind of postscript, waving her hands towards Tuppence, who was hesitating in the doorway.
Tuppence retired immediately.
Quite in one of her moods today, said Miss Packard,
unruffled as they went down the stairs.
Sometimes, you know, she added, she can be quite pleasant. You'd hardly believe it.
Tommy sat down in the chair indicated to him by Aunt Ada, and remarked mildly that he couldn't tell her much about his mother, as she'd been dead now for nearly 40 years. Aunt Ada was unperturbed by this statement.
Fancy, she said, as long as that, is it? Well, time does pass quickly.
She looked him over in a considering manner.
Why don't you get married? She said. Get some nice, capable woman to look after you. You're getting on, you know. Save you taking up with all these loose women and bringing them round and speaking as though they were your wife.
I can see, said Tommy, that I shall have to get Tuppence to bring her marriage lines along next time we come to see you.
I made an honest woman of her, have you?
Said Aunt Ada. We've been married over 30 years, said Tommy. And we've got a son and a daughter, and they're both married too.
Well, the trouble is, said Aunt Ada, shifting her ground with dexterity, that nobody tells me anything if you kept me properly up to date.
Tommy did not argue the point. Tuppence had once laid upon him a serious injunction. If anybody over the age of 65 finds fault with you, she said, never argue. Never try to say you're right. Apologize at once and say it was all your fault and you're very sorry and you'll never do it again. It occurred to Tommy at this moment with some force that that would certainly be the line to take with Aunt Ada, and indeed always had been.
I'm very sorry, Aunt Ada, he said. I'm afraid, you know, one does tend to get forgetful as time goes on. It's not everyone, he continued unblushingly, who has your wonderful memory for the past.
Aunt Ada smirked. There was no other word for it.
You have something there, she said. I'm sorry if I received you rather roughly, but I don't care for being imposed upon. You never know in this place. They let anyone in to see you, anyone at all.
If I accepted everyone for what they said they were, they might be intending to rob and murder me in my bed.
Oh, I don't think that's very likely, said Tommy.
You never know, said Aunt Ada. The things you read in the paper, and the things people come and tell you. Not that I believe everything I'm told, but I keep a sharp lookout. Would you believe it? They brought a strange man in the other day. Never seen him before. Called himself Dr. Williams. Said Dr. Murray was away on his holiday, and this was his new partner. New partner? How was I to know he was his new partner? He just said he was, that's all.
Was he his new partner?
Well, as a matter of fact, said Aunt Ada, slightly annoyed at losing ground, he actually was. But nobody could have known it for sure. There he was, drove up in a car, had that little kind of black box with him which doctors carry to do blood pressure, all that sort of thing. It's like the magic box they all used to talk about so much. Who was it? Joanna Southcott's?
No, said Tommy. I think that was rather different. A prophecy of some kind.
Oh, I see. Well, my point is anyone could come into a place like this and say he was a doctor, and immediately all the nurses would smirk and giggle and say, oh yes, doctor, of course, doctor, and more or less stand to attention, silly girls. And if the patient swore she didn't know the man, they'd only say she was forgetful and forgot people. I never forget a face, said Aunt Ada firmly. I never have. How is your Aunt Caroline? I haven't heard from her for some time. Have you seen anything of her?
Tommy said, rather apologetically, that his Aunt Caroline had been dead for 15 years. Aunt Ada did not take this demise with any signs of sorrow. Aunt Caroline had, after all, not been her sister, but merely her first cousin.
Everyone seems to be dying, she said, with a certain relish. No stamina. That's what's the matter with them. Weak heart, coronary thrombosis, high blood pressure, chronic bronchitis, rheumatoid arthritis, all the rest of it. Feeble folk, all of them. That's how the doctors make their living, giving them boxes and boxes and bottles of tablets. Yellow tablets, pink tablets, green tablets, even black tablets. I shouldn't be surprised. Ugh! Brimstone and treacle they used to use in my grandmother's day. I bet that was as good as anything. With the choice of getting well or having brimstone and treacle to drink, you choose getting well every time. She nodded her head in a satisfied manner. Can't really trust doctors, can you? Not when it's a professional matter, some new fad. I'm told there's a lot of poisoning going on here to get hearts for the surgeon, so I'm told. Well, I don't think that's true myself. Miss Packard's not the sort of woman who would stand for that.
Downstairs, Miss Packard, her manner slightly apologetic, indicated a room leading off the hall. I'm so sorry about this, Mrs. Beresford, but I expect you know how it is with elderly people. They take fancies or dislikes and persist in them. It must be very difficult running a place of this kind, said Tuppence.
Oh, not really, said Miss Packard. I quite enjoy it, you know. And really, I'm quite fond of them all. One gets fond of people one has to look after, you know. I mean, they have their little ways and their fidgets, but they're quite easy to manage, if you know how.
Tuppence thought to herself that Miss Packard was one of those people who would know how.
They're like children, really, said Miss Packard indulgently. Only children are far more logical, which makes it difficult sometimes with them. But these people are illogical. They want to be reassured by your telling them what they want to believe. Then they're quite happy again for a bit. I've got a nice staff here, people with patience, you know, and good temper, and not too brainy, because if you have people who are too brainy, they are bound to be very impatient. Yes, Miss Donovan, she turned her head as a young woman with pince-nez came running down the stairs.
It's Mrs. Lockett again, Miss Packard. She says she's dying and she wants a doctor called at once.
Oh, said Miss Packard. What's she dying from this time?
She says there was mushroom in the stew yesterday, and that there must have been fungi in it, and she's poisoned.
Well, that's a new one, said Miss Packard. I'd better come up and talk to her. Sorry to leave you, Mrs. Beresford. You'll find magazines and papers in that room.
Oh, I'll be quite all right, said Tuppence.
She went into the room that had been indicated to her. It was a pleasant room overlooking the garden with French windows that opened onto it. There were easy chairs, bowls of flowers on the table. One wall had a bookshelf containing a mixture of modern novels and travel books, and also what might be described as old favourites, which possibly many of the inmates might be glad to meet again. There were magazines on a table. At the moment, there was only one occupant in the room, an old lady with white hair combed back off her face,
who was sitting in a chair, holding a glass of milk in her hand and looking at it. She had a pretty pink and white face, and she smiled at Tuppence in a friendly manner.
"Good morning," she said. "Are you coming to live here, or are you visiting?"
"Oh, I'm visiting," said Tuppence. "I have an aunt here. My husband's with her now. We thought perhaps two people at once was rather too much."
"Oh, that was very thoughtful of you," said the old lady.
She took a sip of milk appreciatively.
"I wonder... Oh, no, I think it's quite all right. Wouldn't you like something? Some tea or some coffee, perhaps?
Let me ring the bell. They're very obliging here."
"No, thank you," said Tuppence. "Really. Or a glass of milk, perhaps. It's not poisoned today."
"No, not even that. We shan't be stopping much longer."
"Well, if you're quite sure. But it wouldn't be any trouble, you know. Nobody ever thinks anything is any trouble here.
Unless, I mean, you ask for something quite impossible." "I dare say the aunt we're visiting sometimes asks for quite impossible things," said Tuppence. "She's a Miss Fanshawe," she added.
"Oh, Miss Fanshawe,"
said the old lady.
"Oh, yes."
Something seemed to be restraining her, but Tuppence said cheerfully, "She's rather a Tartar, I should imagine. She always has been."
"Oh, yes. Indeed she is. I used to have an aunt myself, you know, who was very like that, especially as she grew older. But we're all quite fond of Miss Fanshawe. She can be very, very amusing, if she likes. About people, you know."
"Yes, I dare say she could be," said Tuppence. She reflected a moment or two, considering Aunt Ada in this new light.
"Very acid," said the old lady. "Oh, my name is Lancaster, by the way. Mrs. Lancaster."
"Oh, my name's Beresford," said Tuppence.
"I'm afraid, you know, one does enjoy a bit of malice now and again. Her descriptions of some of the other guests here, and the things she says about them, well, you know, one oughtn't, of course, to find it funny, but one does. Have you been living here long?" "A good while now, yes. Let me see. 7 years? 8 years? Yes, yes, it must be more than 8 years."
She sighed.
"One loses touch with things, and people, too. Any relations I have left live abroad."
"But that must be rather sad."
"No, not really. I didn't care for them very much. Indeed, I didn't even know them well. I had a bad illness, a very bad illness, and I was alone in the world, so they thought it was better for me to live in a place like this. I think I'm very lucky to have come here. They're so kind and thoughtful, and the gardens are really beautiful. I know myself that I shouldn't like to be living on my own, because I do get very confused sometimes, you know. Very confused."
She tapped her forehead.
"I get confused here. I mix things up. I don't always remember properly the things that have happened."
"I'm sorry," said Tuppence. "I suppose one always has to have something, doesn't one?"
"Some illnesses are very painful. We have two poor women living here with very bad rheumatoid arthritis. They suffer terribly. So I think perhaps it doesn't matter so much if one gets, well, just a little confused about what happened and where and who it was and all that sort of thing, you know. At any rate, it's not painful physically."
"No, I think perhaps you're quite right," said Tuppence. The door opened, and a girl in a white overall came in with a little tray with a coffee pot on it and a plate with two biscuits, which she set down at Tuppence's side.
"Miss Packard thought you might care for a cup of coffee," she said.
"Oh, thank you," said Tuppence. The girl went out again, and Mrs. Lancaster said,
"There, you see, very thoughtful, aren't they?"
"Yes, indeed." Tuppence poured out her coffee and began to drink it. The two women sat in silence for some time. Tuppence offered the plate of biscuits, but the old lady shook her head.
"No, thank you, dear. I just like my milk plain."
She put down the empty glass and leaned back in her chair, her eyes half closed. Tuppence thought that perhaps this was the moment in the morning when she took a little nap, so she remained silent. Suddenly, however, Mrs. Lancaster seemed to jerk herself awake again. Her eyes opened. She looked at Tuppence and said,
I see you're looking at the fireplace.
Oh, was I? Said Tuppence, slightly startled.
Yes, I wondered.
She leant forward and lowered her voice.
Excuse me, was it your poor child?
Tuppence, slightly taken aback, hesitated. No, I don't think so, she said.
I wondered. I thought perhaps you'd come for that reason. Someone ought to come, sometime. Perhaps they will. And looking at the fireplace the way you did, that's where it is, you know. Behind the fireplace.
Oh, said Tuppence.
Oh, is it? Always the same time,
said Mrs. Lancaster in a low voice.
Always the same time of day.
She looked up at the clock on the mantelpiece. Tuppence looked up also.
11:10,
said the old lady.
11:10. Yes, it's always the same time every morning.
She sighed.
People didn't understand. I told them what I knew, but they wouldn't believe me.
Tuppence was relieved that at that moment the door opened and Tommy came in. Tuppence rose to her feet.
Here I am. I'm ready.
She went towards the door, turning her head to say,
Goodbye, Mrs. Lancaster.
How did you get on? She asked Tommy, as they emerged into the hall. After you left, said Tommy, like a house on fire.
I seem to have had rather a bad effect on her, don't I? Said Tuppence.
Rather cheering in a way.
Why cheering?
Well, at my age, said Tuppence, and what with my neat and respectable and slightly boring appearance, it's nice to think that you might be taken for a depraved woman of fatal sexual charm.
Idiot, said Tommy, pinching her arm affectionately.
Who are you hobnobbing with? She looked a very nice, fluffy old lady.
Oh, she was nice, said Tuppence. A dear old thing, I think. But unfortunately, bats.
Bats?
Yes. Seemed to think there was a dead child behind the fireplace or something of the kind. She asked me if it was my poor child.
Rather unnerving, said Tommy. I suppose there must be some people who are slightly batty here, as well as normal elderly relatives with nothing but age to trouble them. Still, she looked nice.
Oh, she was nice, said Tuppence. Nice and very sweet, I think. I wonder what exactly her fancies are, and why.
Miss Packard appeared again suddenly.
Goodbye, Mrs. Beresford. I hope they brought you some coffee.
Oh, yes, they did, thank you.
Well, it's been very kind of you to come, I'm sure, said Miss Packard.
Turning to Tommy, she said, And I know Miss Fanshawe has enjoyed your visit very much.
I'm sorry she was so rude to your wife.
I think that gave her a lot of pleasure, too, said Tuppence.
Yes, you're quite right, she does like being rude to people. She's unfortunately rather good at it.
And so she practices the art as often as she can, said Tommy.
You're very understanding, both of you, said Miss Packard. The old lady I was talking to, said Tuppence. Mrs. Lancaster, I think she said her name was.
Oh, yes, Mrs. Lancaster. We're all very fond of her.
Is she a little peculiar?
Well, she has fancies, said Miss Packard indulgently. We have several people here who have fancies. Quite harmless ones. But, well, there they are. Things that they believe to have happened to them, or to other people. We try not to take any notice, not to encourage them, just play it down. I think, really, it's just an exercise in imagination, a sort of fantasy they like to live in. Something exciting, or something sad and tragic, it doesn't matter which. But no persecution mania, thank goodness. That would never do.
Well, that's over, said Tommy with a sigh, as he got into the car. We shan't need to come again for at least 6 months.
But they didn't need to go and see her in 6 months, for 3 weeks later, Aunt Ada died in her sleep.
Chapter 3 A Funeral
Funerals are rather sad, aren't they? Said Tuppence.
They had just returned from attending Aunt Ada's funeral, which had entailed a long and troublesome railway journey, since the burial had taken place at the country village in Lincolnshire, where most of Aunt Ada's family and forebears had been buried.
"Well, what do you expect a funeral to be?" said Tommy, reasonably. "A scene of mad gaiety?"
"Well, it could be in some places," said Tuppence.
"I mean, the Irish enjoy a wake, don't they? They have a lot of keening and wailing first, and then plenty of drink and a sort of mad whoopee.
Drink, she added, with a look towards the sideboard.
Tommy went over to it, and duly brought back what he considered appropriate, in this case, a white lady.
Ah, that's more like it, said Tuppence.
She took off her black hat and threw it across the room, and slipped off her long black coat.
I hate mourning, she said. It always smells of mothballs, because it's been laid up somewhere.
Well, you don't need to go on wearing mourning. It's only to go to the funeral in, said Tommy.
No, I know that. In a minute or two, I'm going to go up and put on a scarlet jersey, just to cheer things up. You can make me another white lady.
Oh, really, Tuppence? I had no idea that funerals would bring out this party feeling.
I said funerals were sad, said Tuppence,
when she reappeared a moment or two later, wearing a brilliant cherry-red dress with a ruby and diamond lizard pinned to the shoulder of it.
Because it's funerals like Aunt Ada's that are sad. I mean, elderly people, not many flowers, not a lot of people sobbing and sniffing around. Someone old and lonely who won't be missed much.
I should have thought it would be much easier for you to stand that than it would be if it were my funeral, for instance.
Well, that's where you're entirely wrong, said Tuppence. I don't particularly want to think of your funeral, because I'd much prefer to die before you do, but I mean, if I were going to your funeral, at any rate it would be an orgy of grief. I should take a lot of handkerchiefs.
With black borders?
Well, I hadn't thought of black borders, but it's a nice idea. And besides, the burial service is rather lovely, makes you feel uplifted. Real grief is real. It makes you feel awful, but it does something to you. I mean, it works it out like perspiration.
Really, Tuppence, I find your remarks about my decease and the effect it will have upon you in exceedingly bad taste. I don't like it. Let's forget about funerals.
I agree. Let's forget.
The poor old bean's gone, said Tommy, and she went peacefully and without suffering. So let's leave it at that. I'd better clear up all these, I suppose. He went over to the writing table and ruffled through some papers. Now, where did I put Mr. Rockbury's letter?
Who's Mr. Rockbury? Oh, you mean the lawyer who wrote to you?
Yes, about winding up her affairs. I seem to be the only one of the family left by now.
Pity she hadn't got a fortune to leave you, said Tuppence.
If she had had a fortune, she'd have left it to that cat's home, said Tommy. The legacy that she's left to them in her will will probably eat up all the spare cash. There won't be much left to come to me. Not that I need it, or want it, anyway.
Was she so fond of cats?
Well, I don't know. I suppose so. I never heard her mention them. I believe, said Tommy thoughtfully, she used to get rather a lot of fun out of saying to old friends of hers, when they came to see her, I've left you a little something in my will, my dear, or this brooch that you're so fond of, I've left you in my will. She didn't actually leave anything to anyone except the cat's home.
I bet you got rather a kick out of that, said Tuppence.
I can just see her saying all those things you told me to a lot of her old friends, or so-called old friends, because I don't suppose they were really people she liked at all. She just enjoyed leading them up the garden path.
I must say, she was an old devil, wasn't she, Tommy? Only, in a funny sort of way, one likes her for being an old devil. It's quite something to be able to get some fun out of life when you're old and stuck away in a home. Shall we have to go to Sunny Ridge?
Where's the other letter? The one from Miss Packard. Oh, yes, here it is. I put it with Rockbury's. Yes, she says there are certain things there, I gather, which apparently are now my property. She took some furniture with her, you know, when she went to live there, and of course there are her personal effects, clothes and things like that. I suppose somebody will have to go through them, and letters and things. I'm her executor, so I suppose it's up to me. I don't suppose there's anything we want, really, is there? Except there's a small desk there that I always liked. Belonged to old Uncle William, I believe.
Well, you might take that as a memento, said Tuppence. Otherwise, I suppose we just send the things to be auctioned.
So you don't really need to go there at all, said Tommy.
Oh, I think I'd like to go there, said Tuppence.
You'd like to?
Why?
Wouldn't it be rather a bore to you?
What, looking through her things?
Well, no, I don't think so. I think I've got a certain amount of curiosity.
Old letters and antique jewellery are always interesting, and I think one ought to look at them oneself, not just send them to auction or let strangers go through them.
No, we'll Go and look through the things and see if there's anything we would like to keep and otherwise settle up.
Why do you really want to go? You've got some other reason, haven't you?
Oh, dear, said Tuppence. It's awful being married to someone who knows too much about one.
So, you have got another reason.
Well, not a real one.
Come on, Tuppence. You're not really so fond of turning over people's belongings.
That, I think, is my duty, said Tuppence firmly. No, the only other reason is...
Come on, cough it up.
I'd really rather like to see that other old pussy again.
What, the one who thought there was a dead child behind the fireplace?
Yes, said Tuppence. I'd like to talk to her again. I'd like to know what was in her mind when she said all those things. Was it something she remembered, or was it something that she just imagined? The more I think about it, the more extraordinary it seems. Is it a sort of story that she wrote to herself in her mind, or was there once something real that happened about a fireplace or about a dead child? What made her think that the dead child might have been my dead child? Do I look as though I had a dead child?
I don't know how you expect anyone to look who has a dead child, said Tommy. I shouldn't have thought so. Anyway, Tuppence, it is our duty to go, and you can enjoy yourself in your macabre way on the side. So that's settled. We'll write to Miss Packard and fix a day.
Chapter 4 Picture of a House. Tuppence drew a deep breath.
It's just the same, she said.
She and Tommy were standing on the front doorstep of Sunny Ridge.
Why shouldn't it be? Asked Tommy.
I don't know. It's just a feeling I have. Something to do with time. Time goes at a different pace in different places. Some places you come back to, and you feel that time has been bustling along at a terrific rate, and that all sorts of things will have happened and changed. But here...
Tommy, do you remember Ostend?
Ostend?
We went there on our honeymoon, of course I remember.
Do you remember the sign written up? Tram still stand?
It made us laugh. It seemed so ridiculous.
I think it was Knock, not Ostend.
Oh, never mind, you remember it.
Well, this is like that word, tram still stand, a portmanteau word. Time still stand. Nothing's happened here. Time has just stood still. Everything's going on here just the same. It's like ghosts, only the other way round.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Are you going to stand here all day talking about time and not even ring the bell?
Aunt Ada isn't here for one thing. That's different.
He pressed the bell. That's the only thing that will be different. My old lady will be drinking milk and talking about fireplaces, and Mrs. Somebody or Other will have swallowed a thimble or a teaspoon, and a funny little woman will come squeaking out of a room demanding her cocoa, and Miss Packard will come down the stairs and... The door opened. A young woman in a nylon overall said,
Mr. and Mrs. Beresford, Miss Packard's expecting you.
The young woman was just about to show them into the same sitting room as before when Miss Packard came down the stairs and greeted them. Her manner was suitably not quite as brisk as usual. It was grave and had a kind of semi-mourning about it. Not too much, that might have been embarrassing. She was an expert in the exact amount of condolence which would be acceptable. 80 years was the biblical accepted span of life, and the deaths in her establishment seldom occurred below that figure. They were to be expected, and they happened.
So good of you to come. I've got everything laid out tidily for you to look through. I'm glad you could come so soon, because, as a matter of fact, I have already 3 or 4 people waiting for a vacancy to come here. You will understand, I'm sure, and not think that I was trying to hurry you in any way.
Oh, no, of course. We quite understand, said Tommy.
It's all still in the room Miss Fanshawe occupied, Miss Packard explained.
Miss Packard opened the door of the room in which they had last seen Aunt Ada. It had that deserted look a room has when the bed is covered with a dust sheet, with the shapes showing beneath it of folded-up blankets and neatly arranged pillows. The wardrobe doors stood open, and the clothes it had held had been laid on the top of the bed neatly folded.
What do you usually do? What do people do mostly with clothes and things like that? Said Tuppence.
Miss Packard, as invariably, was competent and helpful.
I can give you the name of 2 or 3 societies which are only too pleased to have things of that kind. She had quite a good fur stole and a good quality coat, but I don't suppose you would have any personal use for them. But perhaps you have charities of your own where you would like to dispose of things.
Tuppence shook her head.
She had some jewellery, said Miss Packard. I removed that for safekeeping. You will find it in the right-hand drawer of the dressing table. I put it there just before you were due to arrive.
Oh, thank you very much, said Tommy, for the trouble you have taken.
Tuppence was staring at a picture over the mantelpiece. It was a small oil painting representing a pale pink house, standing adjacent to a canal spanned by a small humpbacked bridge. There was an empty boat drawn up under the bridge against the bank of the canal. In the distance were two poplar trees. It was a very pleasant little scene, but nevertheless Tommy wondered why Tuppence was staring at it with such earnestness.
How funny, murmured Tuppence.
Tommy looked at her inquiringly.
The things that Tuppence thought were funny, he knew by long experience not really to be described by such an adjective at all.
Oh, what do you mean, Tuppence?
It is funny. I never noticed that picture when I was here before. But the odd thing is that I've seen that house somewhere. Or perhaps it's a house just like that that I've seen. I remember it quite well. Funny that I can't remember when and where.
I expect you noticed it without really noticing you were noticing, said Tommy, feeling his choice of words was rather clumsy and nearly as painfully repetitive as Tuppence's reiteration of the word funny.
Did you notice it, Tommy, when we were here last time?
Oh, no. But then I didn't particularly look.
Oh, that picture, said Miss Packard.
No, I don't think you would have seen it when you were here the last time, because I'm almost sure it wasn't hanging over the mantelpiece then. Actually, it was a picture belonging to one of our other guests, and she gave it to your aunt. Miss Fanshawe expressed admiration of it once or twice, and this other lady made her a present of it, and insisted she should have it.
Oh, I see, said Tuppence.
So, of course, I couldn't have seen it here before. But I still feel I know the house quite well, don't you, Tommy?
No, said Tommy.
Well, I'll leave you now, said Miss Packard briskly. I shall be available at any time that you want me.
She nodded with a smile and left the room, closing the door behind her.
I don't really like that woman's teeth, said Tuppence.
What's wrong with them?
Too many of them.
Or too big.
The better to eat you with, my child. Like Red Riding Hood's grandmother.
You seem in a very odd sort of mood today, Tuppence.
I am, rather. I've always thought of Miss Packard as very nice, but today, somehow she seems to me rather sinister.
Have you ever felt that?
No, I haven't. Come on, let's get on with what we came here to do. Look over poor old Aunt Ada's effects, as the lawyers call them.
That's the desk I told you about. Uncle William's desk. Do you like it?
Oh, it's lovely. Regency, I should think. It's nice for the old people who come here to be able to bring some of their own things with them. I don't care for the horsehair chairs, but I'd like that little work table. It's just what we need for that corner by the window, where we've got that perfectly hideous whatnot.
All right, said Tommy. I'll make a note of those two.
Oh, and we'll have the picture over the mantelpiece. It's an awfully attractive picture, and I'm quite sure that I've seen that house somewhere.
Now, let's look at the jewellery.
They opened the dressing table drawer. There was a set of cameos and a Florentine bracelet and earrings and a ring with different coloured stones in it.
I've seen one of these before, said Tuppence. They spell a name, usually. Dearest, sometimes.
Diamond, emerald, amethyst.
No, it's not dearest. I don't think it would be, really. I can't imagine anyone giving your Aunt Ada a ring that's spelt dearest.
Ruby? Emerald?
The difficulty is one never knows where to begin. I'll try again.
Ruby? Emerald?
Another ruby?
No, I think it's a garnet.
And an amethyst and another pinky stone. Must be a ruby this time. And a small diamond in the middle.
Oh, of course, it's regard.
Rather nice, really. So old-fashioned and sentimental.
She slipped it onto her finger.
I think Deborah might like to have this, she said, and the Florentine set. She's frightfully keen on Victorian things. A lot of people are nowadays.
Now, I suppose we'd better do the clothes.
That's always rather macabre, I think. Oh, this is the first stole. Quite valuable, I should think. I wouldn't want it myself. I wonder if there's anyone here. Anyone who was especially nice to Aunt Ada, or perhaps some special friend among the other inmates. Visitors, I mean. They call themselves visitors or guests, I notice. It would be nice to offer her the stole, if so. It's real sable. We'll ask Miss Packard. The rest of the things can go to the charities. So, that's all settled, is it? We'll go and find Miss Packard now. Goodbye, Aunt Ada, she remarked aloud, her eyes turning to the bed. I'm glad we came to see you that last time. I'm sorry you didn't like me, but if it was fun to you not to like me and say those rude things, I don't begrudge it to you. You had to have some fun, and we won't forget you. We'll think of you when we look at Uncle William's desk. They went in search of Miss Packard. Tommy explained that they would arrange for the desk and the small work table to be called for and dispatched to their own address, and that he would arrange with the local auctioneers to dispose of the rest of the furniture. He would leave the choice of any societies willing to receive clothing to Miss Packard, if she wouldn't mind the trouble. I don't know if there's anyone here who would like her sable stole, said Tuppence. It's a very nice one. One of her special friends, perhaps? Or perhaps one of the nurses who had done some special waiting on Aunt Ada? Oh, that is a very kind thought of yours, Mrs. Beresford. I'm afraid Miss Fanshawe hadn't any special friends among our visitors, but Miss O'Keefe, one of the nurses, did do a lot for her and was especially good and tactful. I think she'd be pleased and honoured to have it. Oh, and there's the picture over the mantelpiece, said Tuppence. I'd like to have that. But perhaps the person to whom it belonged and who gave it to her would want to have it back. I think we ought to ask her. Miss Packard interrupted. Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Beresford, I'm afraid we can't do that. It was a Mrs. Lancaster who gave it to Miss Fanshawe, and she isn't with us any longer. Isn't with you? Said Tuppence, surprised. A Mrs. Lancaster, the one I saw last time I was here, with white hair brushed back from her face. She was drinking milk in the sitting room downstairs. She's gone away, you say? Yes, it was all rather sudden. One of her relations, a Mrs. Johnson, took her away about a week ago. Mrs. Johnson had returned from Africa, where she's been living for the last 4 or 5 years, quite unexpectedly. She is now able to take care of Mrs. Lancaster in her own home, since she and her husband are taking a house in England. I don't think, said Miss Packard, that Mrs. Lancaster really wanted to leave us. She had become so set in her ways here, and she got on very well with everyone and was happy. She was very disturbed, quite tearful about it. But what can one do? She hadn't really very much say in the matter, because, of course, the Johnsons were paying for her stay here. I did suggest that as she had been here so long and settled down so well, it might be advisable to let her remain. How long had Mrs. Lancaster been with you? Asked Tuppence. Oh, nearly 6 years, I think. Yes, that's about it. That's why, of course, she'd really come to feel that this was her home. Yes, said Tuppence. Yes, I can understand that. She frowned and gave a nervous glance at Tommy, and then stuck a resolute chin into the air. I'm sorry she's left. I had a feeling when I was talking to her that I'd met her before. Her face seemed familiar to me. And then afterwards, it came back to me that I'd met her with an old friend of mine, a Mrs. Blenkinsop. I thought when I came back here again to visit Aunt Ada that I'd find out from her if it was so. But of course, if she's gone back to her own people, that's different. I quite understand, Mrs. Beresford. If any of our visitors can get in touch with some of their old friends or someone who knew their relations at one time, it makes a great difference to them. I can't remember a Mrs. Blenkinsop ever having been mentioned by her, but then I don't suppose that would be likely to happen in any case. Can you tell me a little more about her, who her relations were, and how she came to come here? There's very little to tell. As I said, it was about 6 years ago that we had letters from Mrs. Johnson inquiring about the home, and then Mrs. Johnson herself came here and inspected it. She said she'd had mentions of Sunny Ridge from a friend, and she inquired the terms and all that, and then she went away. And about a week or a fortnight later, we had a letter from a firm of solicitors in London making further inquiries, and finally they wrote saying that they would like us to accept Mrs. Lancaster, and that Mrs. Johnson would bring her here in about a week's time if we had a vacancy. As it happened, we had. and Mrs. Johnson brought Mrs. Lancaster here, and Mrs. Lancaster seemed to like the place, and liked the room that we proposed to allot her. Mrs. Johnson said that Mrs. Lancaster would like to bring some of her own things. I quite agreed, because people usually do that, and I find they're much happier. So it was all arranged very satisfactorily. Mrs. Johnson explained that Mrs. Lancaster was a relation of her husband's, and not a very near one, but that they felt worried about her because they themselves were going out to Africa. To Nigeria, I think it was. Her husband was taking up an appointment there, and it was likely that they'd be there for some years before they returned to England. So, as they had no home to offer Mrs. Lancaster, they wanted to make sure that she was accepted in a place where she would be really happy. They were quite sure, from what they'd heard about this place, that that was so. So it was all arranged very happily indeed, and Mrs. Lancaster settled down very well here.
I see.
Everyone here liked Mrs. Lancaster very much. She was a bit, woolly in the head. I mean, she forgot things, confused things, and couldn't remember names and addresses sometimes.
Did she get many letters?
Said Tuppence. I mean, letters from abroad and things?
Well, I think Mrs. Johnson or Mr. Johnson wrote once or twice from Africa, but not after the first year. People, I'm afraid, do forget, you know, especially when they go to a new country and a different life, and I didn't think they'd be very closely in touch with her at any time. I think it was just a distant relation and a family responsibility, and that was all it meant to them. All the financial arrangements were done through the lawyer, Mr. Eccles, a very nice, reputable firm. Actually, we'd had one or two dealings with that firm before, so that we knew about them, and they knew about us. But I think most of Mrs. Lancaster's friends and relations had passed over, and so she didn't hear much from anyone. And I think hardly anyone ever came to visit her. One very nice-looking man came about a year later, I think. I don't think he knew her personally at all well, but he was a friend of Mr. Johnson's, and had also been in the colonial service overseas. I think he just came to make sure she was well and happy.
And after that, said Tuppence, everyone forgot about her.
I'm afraid so, said Miss Packard. It's sad, isn't it?
But it's the usual rather than the unusual thing to happen. Fortunately, most visitors to us make their own friends here. They get friendly with someone who has their own tastes or certain memories in common, and so things settle down quite happily. I think most of them forget most of their past life.
Some of them, I suppose, said Tommy, are a little, he hesitated for a word, a little, his hand went slowly to his forehead, but he drew it away. I don't mean, he said.
I know perfectly well what you mean, said Miss Packard. We don't take mental patients, you know, but we do take what you might call borderline cases. I mean people who are rather senile, can't look after themselves properly, or who have certain fancies and imaginations. Sometimes they imagine themselves to be historical personages, quite in a harmless way. We've had two Marie Antoinettes here. One of them was always talking about something called the Petit Trianon, and drinking a lot of milk, which she seemed to associate with the place. And we had one dear old soul who insisted that she was Madame Curie, and that she had discovered radium. She used to read the papers with great interest, especially any news of atomic bombs or scientific discoveries. And then she always explained it was she and her husband who had first started experiments on these lines. Harmless delusions they are that manage to keep you very happy when you're elderly. They don't usually last all the time, you know. You're not Marie Antoinette every day, or even Madame Curie. Usually it comes on about once a fortnight. Then I suppose, presumably, one gets tired of keeping up the play-acting. And, of course, more often it's just forgetfulness that people suffer from. They can't quite remember who they are, or they keep saying there's something very important they've forgotten, and if they could only remember it, that sort of thing.
I see, said Tuppence. She hesitated and then said, Mrs. Lancaster, was it always things about that particular fireplace in the sitting room she remembered? Or was it any fireplace?
Miss Packard stared.
A fireplace?
I don't understand what you mean. It was something she said that I didn't understand. Perhaps she'd had some unpleasant association with a fireplace or read some story that had frightened her.
Possibly.
Tuppence said, I'm still rather worried about the picture she gave to Aunt Ada.
Oh, I really don't think you need worry, Mrs. Beresford. I expect she's forgotten all about it by now. I don't think she prized it particularly. She was just pleased that Miss Fanshawe admired it, and was glad for her to have it. I'm sure she'd be very glad for you to have it, because you admire it. It's a nice picture. I thought so myself. Not that I know much about pictures. I tell you what I'll do. I'll write to Mrs. Johnson, if you'll give me her address, and ask if it's all right to keep it. Well, the only address I've got is this hotel in London they were going to, the Cleveland, I think it was called. Yes, the Cleveland Hotel, George Street, W1. She was taking Mrs. Lancaster there for about 4 or 5 days, and after that I think they were going to stay with some relations in Scotland. I expect the Cleveland Hotel will have a forwarding address. Well, thank you. And now, about this fur stole of Aunt Ada's. I'll go and bring Miss O'Keefe to you. She went out of the room. You and your Mrs. Blenkinsops, said Tommy. Tuppence looked complacent. One of my best creations, she said. I'm glad I was able to make use of her. I was just trying to think of a name, and suddenly Mrs. Blenkinsop came into my mind. What fun it was, wasn't it? It's a long time ago. No more spies in wartime and counter-espionage for us. What's the pity? It was fun, living in that guest house, inventing a new personality for myself. I really began to believe I was Mrs. Blenkinsop. You were lucky to get away safely with it, said Tommy. And in my opinion, as I once told you, you overdid it. I did not. I was perfectly in character. A nice woman, rather silly, and far too much taken up with her 3 sons. That's what I mean, said Tommy. 1 son would have been quite enough. 3 sons were too much to burden yourself with. They became quite real to me, said Tuppence. Douglas, Andrew, and... Goodness, I've forgotten the name of the 3rd one now. I know exactly what they looked like, and their characters, and just where they were stationed. And I talked most indiscreetly about the letters I got from them.
Well, that's over, said Tommy. There's nothing to find out in this place. So forget about Mrs. Blenkinsop. When I'm dead and buried, and you've suitably mourned me and taken up your residence in a home for the aged, I expect you'll be thinking you are Mrs. Blenkinsop half of the time.
It'll be rather boring to have only 1 role to play, said Tuppence.
Why do you think old people want to be Marie Antoinette and Madame Curie and all the rest of it? Asked Tommy.
I expect because they get so bored. One does get bored. I'm sure you would if you couldn't use your legs and walk about, or perhaps your fingers get too stiff and you can't knit. Desperately, you want something to do to amuse yourself, so you try on some public character and see what it feels like when you're it. I can understand that perfectly.
I'm sure you can, said Tommy. God help the home for the aged that you go to. You'll be Cleopatra most of the time, I expect.
Oh, I won't be a famous person, said Tuppence. I'll be someone like a kitchen maid at Anne of Cleves Castle, retailing a lot of spicy gossip that I've heard.
The door opened, and Miss Packard appeared in company with a tall, freckle-faced young woman in nurse's dress and a mop of red hair.
This is Miss O'Keefe, Mr. and Mrs. Beresford. They have something to tell you. Excuse me, will you? One of the patients is asking for me.
Tuppence duly made the presentation of Aunt Ada's fur stole, and Nurse O'Keefe was enraptured.
Oh, it's lovely. It's too good for me, though. You'll be wanting it yourself.
Oh, no, I don't really. It's on the big side for me. I'm too small. It's just right for a tall girl like you.
Aunt Ada was tall.
Ah, she was the grand old lady. She must have been very handsome as a girl.
I suppose so, said Tommy doubtfully. She must have been a tartar to look after, though.
Oh, she was that, indeed. But she had a grand spirit. Nothing got her down. And she was no fool, either. You'd be surprised the way she got to know things. Sharp as a needle, she was.
She had a temper, though.
Yes, indeed. But it's the whining kind that gets you down, all complaints and moans. Miss Fanshawe was never dull. Grand stories she'd tell you of the old days. Rode a horse once, up the staircase of a country house when she was a girl, or so she said. Would that be true now?
Well, I wouldn't put it past her, said Tommy.
You never know what you can believe here. The tales the old dears come and tell you. Criminals that they've recognized. We must notify the police at once, if not we're all in danger.
Somebody was being poisoned last time we were here, I remember, said Tuppence.
Ha ha, that was only Mrs. Lockett.
It happens to her every day. But it's not the police she wants. It's a doctor to be called. She's that crazy about doctors. And someone, a little woman, calling out for Coco. That would be Mrs. Moody. Poor soul. She's gone.
Oh, you mean left here? Gone away?
No, it was a thrombosis took her.
Very sudden.
She was one who was very devoted to your aunt. Not that Miss Fanshawe always had time for her. Always talking 19 to the dozen, as she did. And Mrs. Lancaster has left, I hear. Yes, her folk came for her. She didn't want to go, poor thing. What was the story she told me about the fireplace in the sitting room? Ah, she had lots of stories, that one, about the things that happened to her, and the secrets she knew. There was something about a child, a kidnapped child or a murdered child. It's strange it is, the things they think up. It's the TV, as often as not, that gives them the ideas. Do you find it a strain, working here with all these old people? It must be tiring. Oh, no. I like old people. That's why I took up geriatric work. You've been here long? 1.5 years. She paused. But I'm leaving next month.
Oh, why?
For the first time, a certain constraint came into Nurse O'Keefe's manner.
Well, you see, Mrs. Beresford, one needs a change.
But you'll be doing the same kind of work?
Oh, yes.
She picked up the fur stole.
I'm thanking you again very much, and I'm glad, too, to have something to remember Miss Fanshawe by. She was a grand old lady. You don't find many like her nowadays.